Canty and Golic Jr., the podcast.
A media may not be ready to have that conversation with you. Not us, not here on Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus, presented by Progressive Insurance, where guests will join us on the Goodyear Hotline. Mike Golic Jr., Amber Wilson, filling in for Chris Canty this week. Amber, not afraid to offer up offensive and defensive linemen, or maybe even running back for the MVP, because that's how she sees it.
That's how it should be, in fact. That's how we should do it. Moving forward, no quarterback should be eligible for the MVP award. We understand they're important to their team just by value of their position. Fine, fine. We're all bored with it. Let's move on to other positions. All positions hold value.
That is
Mike
true.
Golic Jr.
That is true. You know what? Let's give them their own little award. Quarterbacks, they had their quarterback club back in the day. Shiny Golden Quarterback Award. One of you guys can win that every year. We'll save the MVP for the rest of the team. That seems fair. That seems fair. They get everything
Absolutely.
Else.
I mean, what the Aaron Rodgers and the Tom Brady's of the world and the Patrick Mahomes, how would they look if there was nobody standing in front of them, you know?
That is true. People often forget that. Thankfully, we are not those people. Now, here we want to also, in addition to getting into more of that with what's going on in the NFL, we have got NFL, NFC, and AFC wildcard scenarios coming out the wazoo. We will get to those as we head to Tuesday Night Football doubleheader. As if the doubleheader on Monday Night Football wasn't enough to satisfy our appetite for bad football. We will get to plenty more of that. Diana Russini, our ESPN NFL reporter, will join us in about a half hour here. But Amber, as we've talked about the effect of COVID on the NFL and on a lot of pro sports leagues right now, we heard from one of the commissioners, Adam Silver, the commissioner of the NBA, joined Malika Andrews and the crew over on NBA Today, and had to answer some tough questions as we see the NHL season put on pause right now for some time around Christmas as we watch the NFL postpone games. Adam Silver was asked about the NBA's willingness to potentially mimic its NHL counterpart. Here's what he had to say.
No plans right now to pause the season. We've, of course, looked at all the options, but frankly, we're having trouble coming up with what the logic would be behind pausing right now as we look through these cases, literally ripping through the country right now, putting aside the rest of the world. I think we're finding ourselves where we sort of knew we were going to get to for the past several months, and that is that this virus will not be eradicated, and we're going to have to learn to live with it. And I think that's what we're experiencing in the league right now.
Amber, is it surprising to hear a commissioner talking about that after the last couple of years that we've had?
I mean, I think it's making news today, but I think he's saying the thing that we've all been thinking for some time. He's saying the thing out loud where this isn't going anywhere and we have to figure out how to live with this, because it's obvious at this point as new variants come out and as these surges continue to go in waves. I mean, I remember when the world first shut down and I was doing my local show in Miami and we walked out of the studio because they were shutting down our studios. And I remember my co-host at the time saying to me, I think we'll probably be back in what, about 2 weeks? And that was 2 years ago. And I'm sure everyone has stories like that. And the world changed so much overnight. And now it has been going on for years and years. At some point, the change is the permanent, right? Like at some point,
the new change. Normal.
Yeah, the change is the normal. And at some point, we kind of have to adjust to this is the reality of the situation. It's not going to disappear. We have to figure out how to live in the face of this, and that includes playing sports in the face of this as well. I will say one thing about the NBA here real quick is I do think the NBA is at a decided advantage here, where I don't believe there's been anybody in the NBA who has gotten extremely sick from COVID. You know, whether that's conditioning, whether that's because they're young, whether it's because it's smaller rosters, whatever the case, I do believe that the NFL has had some of those issues, not many, but some of those issues where they've had some players in the hospital. I don't think that's happened with the NBA. And so if you're in a world where, you know, most of your players are vaccinated and when they catch it, they're handling it very well and it's a head cold for them. And with this new variant, you know, people aren't getting as sick, it's a head cold. Then really, what is the danger then moving forward and how do we handle that? And those are the conversations I imagine league offices are having.
Yeah, I think it's going to be just as much, because there are certainly some instances. Remember Jason Tatum talking about the difficulty in the return to play for him, his cardiovascular health. Certainly Carl Anthony Towns had his battles. A lot of that was what his family experienced and some of the loss there. But to me, Amber, the charge is going to be really, I think, the purest version of what it was at the beginning, we understand that not only the players are involved in these decisions, but the people around these organizations, coaches, members of the support staff, the training staff, who may be in that older, more vulnerable section of the population, and how do we go about protecting them best while also understanding that what Adam Silver said there is true. If this is not going anywhere, we're going to have to figure out ways to work with this and live with this. Now, I don't bring up this example to say that it has been a perfect sample size or ever will be. I think a lot of this is timing, because as we get to college football season end here, we're in bowl season, but we're not playing the same round of weekly games here during a time where this new variant has become most transmissible, has become the dominant force in the country as far as positives with this virus. But college football has largely been operating by the rules of, if you are a vaccinated person, you are only going to test when you are showing visible symptoms. And if you are an unvaccinated person, you're going to test, depending on the discretion of the school or the conference, maybe once a week, maybe more than that. We're seeing the NFL move closer to that mark. It is different in leagues with unions, where the players get a voice in all of this, and rightly so, Amber. But you wonder if we're going to see the NFL, the NBA, and the NHL get closer to that in saying, all right, we want to keep an eye out for people that might be experiencing symptoms, people that might be dealing with a more aggressive version of this or reacting more aggressively to this, while also understanding that if we're going to get through this on the field, on the court, in the way that we'd like to, maybe scaling back is going to be that next step.
I do think what has aided college football a bit, like you said, is timing. Because what we have seen over the last couple of years living through this pandemic is, like most viruses, this thing does seem to go in waves. And right now, the NFL is at a very difficult time for a surge. The NBA is in a regular season, right? So the NBA is a really long time here until they're looking towards their postseason or a championship. Maybe by then, we'll be at the end of the surge. Who knows? And it will have died down and they won't have the same complications. I do think the timing of your sport, unfortunately, matters. And you have to figure out how to navigate that. And like you said, unions make a big difference in professional sports because, of course, those players have concerns and those unions have concerns themselves. And so maybe they want some semblance of testing, even if there aren't symptoms, to kind of try to track things, to try to protect other people or other players or players' families and whatnot. All of that is a discussion that everybody has to continue to have moving forward. It's pretty remarkable now that you mentioned it to me when we were preparing for the show, how college football handled it. And I thought, you know what? I haven't even really considered that. But yes, we were not having conversations about, Ohio State missing their entire O-line and college teams missing their entire coaching staff. Like, there wasn't a ton of that during the season, and that affected that sport in a way that really ended up affecting the playoff picture here. And yet look what we're seeing right now in the NFL. I think some of that is timing, frankly, and some of it is testing. And of course, the more testing there is, the more positive there is going to be.
And I think the testing thing, and I understand this is probably going to draw a reaction. This is not going to be perfect. Morally, there could be a lot of objection to that and saying we should want to know more in these spots, that health and safety should be the priority here. But we've also seen how you go about being diligent in practice. Nick Saban in Alabama, who I think have been in a lot of ways a poster of how to handle this, that is a team that was largely one of the most vaccinated in college football. According to Nick Saban, about 90% of that team has received the COVID booster. And he said, as they prepare for the college football playoff, they've gone back to 2020 protocol, meaning virtual meetings, masking up even if you are vaccinated inside the building, working out in smaller groups. Amber, this is a coach that understands as well as anybody looking for competitive advantage. And one of those is, how will you handle the virus? We've talked about that with the NFL. And I have a feeling a lot of this in these tougher portions of the year, like you mentioned, calendar wise, are going to be, all right, how do we put in best practices in order for teams and leagues to be able to get through this?
I mean, how many times have we said the best ability is availability? That's going to apply to a virus as well. And that's just the stark reality of it. And it does seem like Nick Saban and that Alabama coaching staff, they get it. They're doing everything they can to try to prohibit as much unnecessary contact as there needs to be so that they don't end up in a situation where they're obviously affected in a championship type run and they can't field a team, or they're missing some of their stars, or they're missing their most important player. And that's, of course, what everybody wants to avoid. And they want to avoid missing their coaching staff as well, or any of their support staff or anybody around them. So I do think at some point here, it's up to teams to just put in the safety protocols, and maybe that needs to be a team decision, or maybe there's things on a league basis that we can do across these sports, but it going away, like Adam Silver said, that ain't an option right now. And I think that's a reality that we all have to get used to. That is the new normal.
That is certainly the new normal. So again, Adam Silver, the commissioner of the NBA, joining NBA Today and Malika Andrews, saying there are currently no plans to pause the NBA season, although they will continue to gather information and remain aware of what's going on as this changes around them. We want to remind you guys, listen to Man in the Arena, the podcast. It's a 10-part series exploring how sports impacts our everyday lives through the lens of Tom Brady's career. It's brought to you by ZipRecruiter and available wherever you get your podcasts. Coming up next, the NFL season rolls along. Before we go forward, we got to look back. We'll give you the top five from the weekend that was next on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Number five. Amber, I enjoy when wins happen on and off the field in the NFL. The Pittsburgh Steelers got a win over the Tennessee Titans. They remain engaged in the AFC wild card picture, but they also got a win off the field. Steelers offensive tackle, noted large University of Southern California alum Zach Banner, proposed to, successfully, his girlfriend in a beautiful scene. For anyone that missed it, at ZBNFL on Twitter, a beautiful skyline scene of what appears to be downtown Pittsburgh with large letters spelling out "Marry Me," candlelit all around, a red carpet walk to the end. Amber, it's a reminder that big boys do romance in a way that few others can.
Yes, they are very romantic, apparently. This went a little bit better than the proposal we saw this weekend at the Miami Dolphins game where the guy tried to propose and it was only the girl in her seat when they showed her on the Jumbotron and the guy wasn't actually there and apparently was waiting for some sort of cue and didn't make it down in time to propose. So this Zach Banner proposal went much better. A beautiful skyline, really well done. Seems like an intimate proposal, even though he went big. I like it.
Great
job,
stuff.
Zach.
Congratulations to actual friend of the program, Zach Banner, who has been on with us on the engagement and on the Steelers' continued pursuit for the AFC wild card. Number four. Amber, I can't get over what we heard yesterday. The Bill Belichick apology to the media after his terse remarks following their loss to the Indianapolis Colts. I understand the Patriots losing should not technically be a part of anyone's top five, but this feels like growth, and whether it is a sign of the impending apocalypse or just Bill Belichick waking up and feeling some type of way on a Monday, I'm thankful we got to live to see it.
I'm glad you included this on your best of the NFL list. I almost thought about including this on my worst because it just made me so uncomfortable that we were hearing Bill apologize for being Bill. Although in the holiday spirit, apparently Bill Belichick is, and absolutely I'm here for the apology that frankly, you know, there's other times that maybe that apology was also warranted, kind of like every other time he speaks to the media. But if this was the time that he decided to evaluate his life and himself and apologize to the media for being short with the media, which sounds a lot like Bill just being Bill. Absolutely, it was a great thing to see in the holiday spirit. He apologized for that.
Yeah, it's a
That's
beautiful
Bill. That's so Bill.
It is
Bill being Bill.
It is what it is, Bill. You silly little minx. Canty and Golic Jr., the top five things from the NFL weekend. Number three, who else wants some Adebo? Debo Samuel continues his march toward the record books in the NFL. The 49ers get a win over the Falcons. And I saw this note courtesy of Paul Hembakides, the ESPN Greek god of stats, who said among all players to catch at least 25 passes this season, Debo leads the NFL in yards per reception at just under 18. Among all players to rush at least 25 times in the NFL, Debo Samuel is leading the NFL in rushing average at a very nice 6.9 yards per carry. Amber, as we talk about MVP candidates, we had a caller throw his name in the ring yesterday, deservedly so.
Yeah, I mean, Debo Samuel is turning out to be an unbelievable talent and an unbelievable weapon for that 49ers team. He would be the only wide receiver since the NFL merger to lead a team in rushing and touchdowns. He has rushed for 6 touchdowns this season. That is one more than their starting running back has done. It is an unbelievable thing, an unbelievable feat. I guess he's like the Shohei Ohtani of the NFL, huh? It's pretty cool to watch.
How about that? Number two on this one goes to another guy we talked about of the non-quarterback MVP candidates from yesterday. The winning side of that Bill Belichick loss, the New England Patriots take the L to Jonathan Taylor's Indianapolis Colts, and a dominant performance from him, 29 carries for 170 yards and a touchdown, including that game-sealing run that netted his touchdown. Amber, he is the point of the spear on an offense that went in and out New England this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, that game-sealing run was a 67-yard scamper, just one of many for Jonathan Taylor. I had made the argument yesterday, I just don't think anybody is more central to the identity of their team than Jonathan Taylor. I understand you could say that about like every quarterback in the NFL, but Jonathan Taylor deserves all the accolades and all the praise.
Speaking of accolades and praise, we start with Big Boy Talk, we end with Big Boy Talk on the top five here. Amber, the Miami Dolphins, a team you know very well down there in South Florida, got a win over the Jets this weekend. A win came by 7 points. 7 points that happened to be scored by defensive tackle Christian Wilkins. He came in on offense at fullback, caught a one-yard pass from Tua Tagovailoa, and then proceeded to celebrate doing the worm in the end zone, which prompted our own Marcus Spears on NFL Live to attempt to do the worm, albeit unsuccessfully, in a moment of big man thick six-related glory that I think should stand the test of the time, at the very least, be one of the top five plays of the season.
It was glory, that's for sure. I loved the Wilkins worm. It was interesting, though, because I told you before the show, I said, when you're putting this list together, that Christian Wilkins worm better make an appearance, right, from my Miami Dolphins. And then I asked you, or Shannon, somebody asked you, you know, could you accomplish the worm? Because you said Marcus Spears, not so much. And you, like, immediately answered that. It was in your arsenal. You were ready for that question. You were absolutely confident in your worm skills, which leads me to believe that at some point in your life, you have been known to.
Oh, yeah. Listen, I have hit the bar and bat mitzvah circuit as a kid here. I have been a wedding juggernaut for years of my adult life, Amber. I am not new to this. I am true to this. And the worm is just one of the many tools in the arsenal put on display by Christian Wilkins, who's got a few excellent moves in the bag for himself when it comes to celebrations. Going back to his days at Clemson, that is the top five. Amber Wilson will hold down the bottom five coming up in about an hour. But coming up next, we got to check in with more on the latest from COVID-19 affecting one of the prime players down the stretch of the NFL season in the AFC. We'll get to that after this word from Wendy's. Now, right now, actually, at Wendy's, you can see what all the hype's about with our new guaranteed hot and crispy fries. We're talking real, natural cut potatoes, perfectly sprinkled in sea salt, and guaranteed to be hot and crispy, down to the very last fry. Or they'll replace them. These aren't just the typical fries you add to a meal. These are fries worth adding a meal to. So abandon the old cold and soggy, and head to Wendy's today, where your fries are guaranteed to be hot and crispy. At participating U.S. Wendy's, back with Diana Rossini next on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Kanny and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr., Amber Wilson filling in for Chris Kanny today. We're presented by Progressive Insurance, and guests join us on the Goodyear Hotline. And I don't know what took us so long. Shame on our damn show. But this is the first time this fall that we have been able to welcome back into the fold ESPN NFL reporter Diana Rossini, who's back at it covering the NFL after having her first child, beautiful young Michael. Great name, Diana, first and foremost. How are you?
You know what's so funny? I was thinking about it today, and I started to do that thing when you start going through your memories of, did something happen? Did I send Mike a bad text? Was he mad that I didn't name him the godfather of my son? Like, what is it that he doesn't have me back? Because I think the last time I actually spoke to you on the radio was in Nashville when Julio Jones joined the Tennessee Titans and practiced with the team for the first time. Because I remember I was about 8 months pregnant, almost 8 months pregnant, and I was sweating. And I kept thinking, don't pass out while you're on the phone. Like, just get through this interview and then you can go sit down in the shade. So it's been that long, and the interview must have been terrible because the invitation has not come back to me, but it is good to be here now.
Diana, all I can say is these were clerical errors outside of my control, because I can assure you, sweating almost to the point of passing out while watching football is basically the love language of this show. So you would have been right on cue. We are glad you didn't pass out. We are even happier to have you back right now. So welcome back to Diana Rossini, our ESPN NFL reporter, who I'm hoping is feeling better today as she talks to us. Diana, I can't say the same about the rest of the NFL right now, though. We keep just sitting around and waiting to find out who's tested positive for COVID-19 next. The latest hotspot seems to be in Kansas City. I know Adam Schefter has tweeted about Tyreek Hill and six others added to the COVID reserve list. Is there anything else you've heard on that front as far as what that situation looks like?
Yeah, the only thing that I've heard in like the last, I'd say, 30 minutes from just talking to people around the league, kind of bracing for, is this going to get worse? And all signs point to the numbers continuing to go up for Kansas City and for many other teams around the league. But I think it's probably important to just note that the players that are vaccinated, if they test negative one time between now and that Sunday Steelers game, you know, they've got a really good chance of playing. You know, the guys that are vaxxed have a chance, but there's really no way or point in saying how much of a chance at this point. The way you kind of have to look at it is, you know, the virus just impacts each person differently, but if they're vaxxed and asymptomatic, they need one negative and then they're good. If they're unvaccinated or still sick, then they're a no-go. So that's kind of how you have to separate or at least look at it at this point. But the fact that the tone right now is that it's going to get worse, obviously not great news for the league.
Diana, speaking of the Ravens, I mean, it's every team in the league right now. The Ravens, they just placed their outside linebacker on the reserve COVID-19 list today. That's like their seventh active player, I think, on that list. You were at, I believe, that Packers-Ravens game. Obviously, things have changed here playoff picture-wise for the Ravens. Now they're on the bubble. What is your confidence in that team moving forward?
Man, they have been hit with so much. And you know, we can talk about it over and over and over again. And I do think we get a little immune to hearing, no pun intended on the word immune, but, you know, immune to hearing about all these injuries and the depleted secondary. You know, but the one thing I think most people that watch football know is that the Ravens are the type of organization. They have a clear identity. They do not give up. They do not quit. You know, one of the perks of covering games on Sunday is I'm getting access to the players and the coaches before the game and after the game. And I'm always so impressed with the overall just attitude that the Ravens always have post game. And while they're frustrated and annoyed, they know they're doing the best they possibly can right now with sort of a patchwork team, you know, from the offensive line, you know, to their front seven, to their secondary, their receiving core at times. And obviously at the quarterback position, they don't even have their starter. We all saw Tyler Huntley, you know, pretty much blow us all away with his ability. And by the way, I need to be clear on this too. The Ravens were trying to let us all know that Tyler Huntley could play. I covered the Ravens when they lost to the Browns, and in the post game press conferences, I just couldn't believe how much they were talking about Tyler Huntley and how good he is. And sometimes you got to kind of get through some of the coach speak, the player speak, and I've got a few great relationships with people in the Ravens, and they were very blunt with me, like, this guy can play. Like, don't, you know, we're not just saying it. This is like a full, we watch him in practice all the time. Like, there's he's kind of a little bit of a secret weapon for us, but the secret is out now. And the fact that they have somebody at the quarterback position that they can depend on, you know, we're talking about Lamar Jackson. He's one of the best players in football, yet his backup quarterback is able to get the job done and almost get a win against the, you know, the best team in the NFC.
Diana Rossini, our ESPN NFL reporter, with us on the Goodyear Hotline. And Diana, that was, I think, a weird visual for a lot of people because we had seen Lamar Jackson struggle in a couple of recent games after an MVP-level start to the year full of injuries for that team here. What has the team said about Lamar Jackson as he gears up to return and about his, you know, his performance down the stretch of the season?
Yeah, I think you can comfortably cut to the chase there and just say he's not doing well. He hasn't played well. It hasn't been a great month. But something that I've gathered over the last month of being around Baltimore is just nobody is putting the full blame on him. We all know that this team rises and falls pretty much by Lamar's production. And when he's not producing, they don't win. And there's really no way around it. And yeah, that's basic NFL football. It's basic football in general if the quarterback's not playing well. But with this team specifically, everything is built around Lamar Jackson. And, you know, there's been some thought that, you know, he has struggled picking up the blitz. There's been some thought on indecisiveness. Greg Roman perhaps not calling the best type of plays for him. you know, there's a mix of all different, I don't want to say pointing or blame, but at the end of the day, it's so interesting when you try to get thoughts on Lamar, whether it's from the actual Ravens or from opponents. And you know, I talked to a lot of defensive coordinators that have played him this year, trying to get an idea, you know, what are you seeing from him? And the takeaway is always, he's so good. He is so phenomenal. And then they get into some of the stuff. You know, he's not the most accurate passer. We all know that. We've seen it. And whenever, you know, teams are forcing him to throw, you know, that's where they're getting into some trouble, because we know when he can use his legs and he's that mobile quarterback, he's one of the best, at least, you know, at least a top three mobile quarterback in the league, if not maybe the number one. So, you know, nobody's blaming Lamar, but when you look at it, the team as a whole, and you see how much he's had to make up for, you know, a really injured offensive line that's been patchworked as well. You're not really sure who's going to be out there. You know, they've sort of had a mix of things that they've had to deal with, and we're not getting the same Lamar we've gotten, you know, last season.
No, he certainly had to plug a lot of holes on the ship for this team this year. And down the stretch of the season, I don't think that expectation is going to change. Like you said, a lot of confidence in the former league MVP, though. And a lot of confidence here that we are not going to go this long again without having you on the show, Diana. My apologies for it not happening sooner. Excited to have you back. Always great to talk to you, buddy.
Thanks for having me, guys. And I haven't had my christening yet for my son, so I'm still deciding who the godfather is going to be. So if you want to, you know, start a campaign, perhaps maybe submit a resume, reasons why Michael Andrew deserves to have you as a godfather, I'm going to be open to it, because I think that's probably the best way to do it. Just make this a competitive contest.
All right. You know what? I am never afraid of competition, Diana, so the resume will be on your desk shortly.
All right, I'll have someone push it through, stack it right on the top. Thanks, guys. Bye, Amber.
Thanks, Diana. ESPN NFL reporter Diana Russini joining us on the Goodyear Hotline.
Naming her firstborn after you isn't enough? You need to be the godfather?
Listen, I am greedy when it comes to that stuff. And selfishly, I think I'm a great godfather. Now, I've only got one rep of being a godparent under my belt, but I think I'm doing a pretty damn good job of it so far here. We'll get Giants tight end Kyle Rudolph on here and see if he can grade the Godfather in a little bit here. But coming up next, I'm just kidding. We haven't called him. That's not a tease. I don't want to make you guys think that he's coming on the show. He might be, so you should probably stick around. But also coming up next, we'll talk about the Jets and the Giants.
You felt guilty real fast.
I did.
Fake tease.
I didn't want to mislead everyone that much, especially because coming up next, we're going to talk about how much the Jets and the Giants both stink on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Ian Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr. and Amber Wilson filling in today for Chris Canty. Our thanks to Diana Russini, our ESPN NFL reporter, for joining us, getting us caught up to speed on more of the news and notes around the NFL. Amber, something that is not news really to anyone at this point. Both the New York football teams are bad. Like, really not very good. Like, how bad do you ask? Well, since 2012, the two teams have combined for 16 losing seasons and one playoff berth. The Giants were a wild card team in 2016, that and the famous Miami boat issue that went on there. Timberland boots in South Beach on a boat that turned into a postseason loss. And they have been a combined 43-113 since that moment here. Jordan Renan and company did an article on this, him and Rich Cimini, our Jets reporter, on the factory of sadness that has been New York football here. Amber, the real question is now, as we sit here, because they both struggled this weekend. Daniel Jones just got shut down. The Jets have been a laughingstock. Is there anything to feel good about going forward? Like, if you had to pick a side in this one and back one of these teams to be better sooner, is there one you can confidently say yes to?
Well, I don't know about better sooner. I don't feel confident that either of these teams are going to be particularly good anytime soon. What in recent history would make you feel good about that, especially those statistics that you just rattled off? When I look at these two teams, though, I do think the Giants organization as a whole seems a little bit better to me than the Jets. I mean, obviously, both of these teams right now are trash, and changes have to be made with the Giants organization, particularly, I think, in terms of that GM and Dave Gettleman. I don't know if I'm quite as out yet on Joe Judge, although a lot of people want that change, too. I just don't think he's been, of course, given much time, and a lot of people are already ready to see a change at quarterback as well in Daniel Jones. It does feel like at least one of those three changes is going to happen this offseason, if not all three, frankly. And if I'm on the outside looking in, then I'm thinking, okay, so maybe the Giants are in a place where they can make a lot of changes. They are the team that was in, like you said, they were in the playoffs in 2016, although not successful. They were winning a championship in 2012. They have had confetti rain down in this decade, which I think that makes them right now the better franchise. If you were to go around the league and you were to talk to, you know, free agents and talk about destinations and where in New York, if you had to choose between one of those two New York teams, where would you feel more comfortable going? I have a feeling the answer would probably be the Giants from an organizational perspective. Team-wise, right now, it's a toss-up because obviously they're both trash, frankly, at the moment.
Yeah, Amber, I think that's been perception, right? Is that the Giants have traditionally been this put-together organization that's enjoyed more top-end success. Recently, I mean, we have to say in the past decade, which boy oh boy is the word decade doing a lot of work in that sentence, because it's been a while since we've had competence on either side. I will say this. You mentioned all the variables for New York. That's what would make me a little bit more confident in the Jets in the interim is at least, yes, it has been bad this year. This team started off the preseason banged up and I don't think ever recovered. They took a prospect, a quarterback in Zach Wilson that was talented but was always going to need time, and a head coach in Robert Saleh that we all trusted and thought was one of the better hires of this past offseason. So, Amber, I would look at the Jets and say they are closer to stability. You'd even throw in Joe Douglas as their GM right now, and I would trust that group a lot more than I trust anything potentially on the horizon with the Giants.
I mean, Saleh seems like a great guy. I don't know if he's a great head coach in the NFL. I don't know if Zach Wilson is going to be any better or even as good as Daniel Jones is at quarterback, right? Like, there are question marks on both of these teams all over the place. If you feel confident about those moves that the Jets did just make, and they made their moves, so they're not necessarily making the moves right now, although of course, they have the picks, but they're not making moves in those situations. Fine. So if you feel confident that there's some stability there moving forward, I just think that those things are also question marks for the Jets. And so even if the Giants end up blowing it up, I look to franchise stability overall, and success in the last decade is going to move the needle for me.
Yeah, there is certainly a lot of that more to point to for the Giants than the Jets. The Jets have had really nothing in the way of success since the Rex Ryan era there with him and Mark Sanchez, which, boy, oh boy, if you'd have told Jets fans that then, they'd have had no idea that they would get to this point this bad now. Coming up next, though, we will look at where we are at now in the NFL and the response to the latest surge in COVID-19 cases next on ESPN Radio.
Thanks for listening to Canty and Golic Jr., the podcast. You can check the guys out live weekday afternoons at 4 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on ESPN+.